Macomb was an old town, but it was a tired old town when I first knew it. In rainy weather, the streets turned a red slop. Grass grew on the sidewalks. The courthouse sagged in the square. Somehow, it was hotter then. A black dog suffered on a summer's day. Bony mules hitched to Hoover carts flicked flies in the sweltering shade of the live oaks on the square. Men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning. Ladies bathed before noon. After their 3 o'clock naps, and by nightfall, were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. People moved slowly then. They ambled across the square, shuffled in and out of the stores around it, took their time about everything. A day was 24 hours long, but seemed longer. There was no hurry, for there was nowhere to go. Nothing to buy, and no money to buy it with. Nothing to see outside the boundaries of Macomb County. But it was a time of vague optimism for some of the people. Macomb County had recently been told that it had nothing to fear but fear itself.
From the opening pages of Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee dedicates the book to her father and to her sister. The preface is this quote from Charles Lamb: "Even lawyers were children once." I'm Suzanne Lang, and today we bring you Radio Sketches. It's a Sin to Kill a Mockingbird. The Big Read is an initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts designed to restore reading to the center of American culture, encourage reading for pleasure and enlightenment, and provide citizens the opportunity to discuss a single book within their community. In Sonoma County, that book is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. Here we will sketch some of the partners creating the dynamism throughout this large, diverse county. We begin with David Kippen, former book critic and book editor for the San Francisco Chronicle. He is now the director of literature for the National Endowment for the Arts in Washington, D.C., and he passed through Sonoma County while on a cross-country journey from east to west, on his big ride for the Big Read. Here is David Kippen.
I'm in the middle of this cross-country ride, the Big Ride. This is about the kick turn for it. I am hopscotching from Big Read to Big Read to Big Read. In which capacity? Just the other day, I was driving from Georgia, where they're doing The Great Gatsby in Atlanta, which is kind of fun because F. Scott Fitzgerald was one of the many contributors to the screenplay of Gone with the Wind, and the sponsor for this Big Read is the Margaret Mitchell House in Atlanta. Anyway, driving from Georgia to Mississippi, where they're reading Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Are Watching God, I made a point of stopping off first in Notasulga, Alabama, which is where Zora Neale Hurston was born, and then in Monroeville, Alabama, which is the basis for Macomb, the setting for To Kill a Mockingbird. I even took some pictures I keep meaning to put up on my blog of the courthouse where Harper Lee's dad, Asa Lee, A.S.A. Lee, was himself a county lawyer and a newspaper man. I always like this about the book, that her dad, Atticus, based on Harper Lee's dad, Scout's dad, based on Harper Lee's dad, was not just a country lawyer, but also a journalist. He edited and wrote editorials for the local paper. I mean, if you look at To Kill a Mockingbird, yes, it's a book about tolerance. It's a book about injustice and racism. It's also a book about reading. Do you remember this? Scout gets into no end of trouble with her new school teacher because Atticus reads her stories at night, and I guess the stories that he reads her don't quite pass muster with the local English teacher. You remember Dill when he first enters the book? He steps out of the tomato patch and sticks his hands out and says, "My name's Dill. I can read." you know, it's a book shot through with a love of literature, which, of course, is very dear to my heart, not just because I used to be the book critic for the San Francisco Chronicle and reading, well, it didn't save my life like it arguably did my bosses, that Sonoman poet Dana Gioia, who's the chairman of the NEA. Books didn't really save me from much besides medical school, but I remain undyingly grateful for that. And, you know, I find a book devoted to literature very heartening, not just, as I say, because I'm, you know, a literary guy, but because there are all these studies, including, I suppose I should mention, Ours, Reading at Risk, which came out in 2004 and basically says that the more you read, the likelier you are to vote and volunteer and go out to the theater or a concert or a sporting event, frankly. So reading is a positive good in itself, but it also is correlated with so many other civic mitzvahs, if you'll pardon a lapse into Yiddish. I'm a Californian too. If I could get everybody in America reading again, I would come home tomorrow a happy man. But if in the process of helping to create this big read thing, I can also we can also, because God knows I don't do this single-handedly. There's half a dozen of us English majors creating the reader's guides and the teacher's guides and the educational CDs that KRCB is blotting out the sun with this month for To Kill a Mockingbird. You know, if as a secondary goal, the big read could give people in cities and towns across the country something in common to talk about, more interesting than the weather, then that too, I think, is worth trying for. I mean, there's all these studies, not NEA studies in this instance for a change, saying that, you know, people don't even know their neighbors' names anymore, that they bowl more but don't do it in leagues like they used to. And this seems to me like a real rupture. And if they can discover each other through the vehicle of reading, of all things, then, you know, how cool is that? We take it for granted, perhaps quixotically, that people can read. What's terrifying, though, is people take that skill for granted and fall out of the habit of using it. Our principal goal here is to help people rediscover what a central role in their lives reading probably once played when they were in school and maybe didn't have too much choice in the matter. I mean, the studies we look at say that people don't run screaming from reading. They just sort of fall away from it through inattention. And of course, we all have lives, lives in which literature doesn't always play as central a role as I've been fortunate enough to have it play in mine. And so the exigencies of life just have a tendency to get in the way. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we cooked up the big read, because if we could give people, if we could sort of get everybody in town either reading the same book or so ashamed not to be reading it that through peer pressure they feel as if they have to, you know, leave town for the month rather than endure the opprobrium, then, you know, maybe people can remember what a joy it is to dive into a book and forget everything else for a couple of hours at a time. I mean, we're looking at a fairly alarming juncture in American intellectual life. I know this firsthand because I was the book critic of the Chronicle for 7 years. I left to work on this program in hopes that maybe we might scare up a reader or two who could be around to enjoy the work of the book critics of tomorrow. But of course, in the 7 years I've been away, no, I was here for 7 years, in the 3 years I've been away, not only have very few book critics of tomorrow emerged, we seem to be losing the book critics of today. We're at a pretty sorry pass right now, and I'd like to think that the big read, in addition to its other ambitious goals, might start to kindle a little prairie fire on behalf of book coverage, because if books aren't discussed in the mass media, if there isn't a terrific radio station like Sonoma County is fortunate enough to have here in KRCB, and it's not in the newspapers, and it doesn't have the sort of currency, the sort of traction in the public conversation that we like to believe it once did, then we become, I think, a lesser civilization. And before long, maybe we won't feel quite so entitled to call ourselves a civilization at all. I mean, you know, it's easy for me to pontificate about this kind of thing, and I do believe it. But when I see it firsthand, when I see how books come into people's hands. You know, people don't need to be talked into this. It's not like medicine. You know, all they need to do is curl up with a book like To Kill a Mockingbird for a few minutes and the joy comes back. But if that's allowed to atrophy, then you've got a fear for the future. If Sonoma has anything in common with other cities and towns across the country, it's probably changing faster than a lot of people who live here might like, which gives it something in common with Macomb, a town, a sleepy town in the South in the 30s during the Depression, which we hope isn't something that it will have in common with Sonoma of today, though I guess looking at the headlines, one can't take it for granted. It's a town that's not exactly a beacon of racial enlightenment, which I hope isn't the case in Sonoma, but as an agricultural community, I'm sure there are stresses which need to be taken into account. This is a book that can stimulate, I think, conversations around ideas about tolerance and community and all of these other nostrums that we invoke so often, sometimes we forget what they mean, which is why I like to remember that in addition to being a good talking book, a book, you know, generate conversations that might bring neighbors closer together, it's also a funny book. Scout's voice is just so delightful. I mean, you know, the indignation, the outrage, and the wit behind it are absolutely winning. And I think, you know, if we conflate it with the movie, which is a wonderful picture. I mean, I'm a film critic in my spare time, so I recognize what a beautiful work it is. But I think Horton Foote, in the course of adapting it, played up a lot of the social commentary, which was absolutely called for, I think, in 1960 or 62, perhaps it was. But some of the wit in the book got lost. And I wish I could be here in Sonoma all month as people dive back into it, those who've read it before, and find a voice in American literature that I think a lot of people are all too inclined to take for granted and really get jazzed about it at a level completely apart from all of its virtues as, you know, a classic of American right-thinking, upstanding tolerance. The Big Read is an absolutely thrilling venture to work on. I wouldn't have left the Chronicle to join this traveling medicine show if I didn't think, and don't think now more than ever, that we're starting to kneecap some of the alarming reading trends that so many of us, if given half a chance, wring our hands about. And when I look around Sonoma, when I look at this full list of events countywide, all designed to celebrate this terrific book, To Kill a Mockingbird, and get people, not just readers who would be reading something else anyway, reading this instead, but people who wouldn't be reading a thing to pick up this book and spend a month with it, I can't help being at least quixotically, cockeyedly sanguine about the future of reading in America and game to re-up for another round and another ride in the Big Read Mobile, because reading isn't spinach. It's too much fun for everybody not to get in on it.
The Big Read is an outgrowth of Sonoma County Reads. This NEA-funded national program is happening in more than 300 communities around the country, all participating during the month of October, reading various books. Here in Sonoma County, that is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. You're listening to Radio Sketches, It's a Sin to Kill a Mockingbird. Robin Metalitz is the outreach coordinator for KRCB Radio in Sonoma County, California. And Robin is the project director for Sonoma County's Big Read. Here's Robin Metalitz.
I'm particularly excited this year that we picked To Kill a Mockingbird because I think it's a very, very rich book. There's a lot of themes, a lot of ways to get at it. You know, it talks about how a society evolves and, you know, becomes more understanding of each other, how barriers between communities can break down. It talks about coming of age, talks about the idea of empathy and learning to walk in someone else's shoes. That was one of the really great things as we started to come together and plan events was there's so many ways to talk about this novel. A lot of folks read this novel in school, but as they reread it as adults, they had entirely different takes on it. There are parts of it that maybe they didn't quite understand when they were younger that meant a lot more to them as adults. So that was a really nice thing to see as people rediscovered this book, even if they had already read it. Another thing is, you know, given the place where we are as a nation, looking at the presidential race, an African-American running for the first time, I think this novel gives us an opportunity to reflect back on how far we've come as a country. You know, how there's still definitely racial tensions in this country, but I think there are a lot of lessons that come out of that in terms of people standing up against injustice, in terms of how you talk to children about these kinds of injustices as they come of age and realize there's injustice in the world. So these are all really, you know, exciting things about it. The other thing is because it's something that a lot of folks have read at one point in their lives, they feel a connection to it. And that's really why everybody who's come to me planning an event says this is one of my favorite novels because it meant so much to me growing up. It really changed my life. One of the things I'm trying to do with this is I think in Sonoma County, we tend to stay sort of isolated in our own little communities, and I've really tried to make an effort to involve the whole county. One of the really great things is that in just about every city in the county, there's at least one or two events happening, and these are everything from book discussion groups, movie screenings, discussions on race. A math teacher is doing a great program. A senior center is doing a program where it pairs seniors with youth. We're actually doing a bird walk because of the mockingbird themes. The local Coast Guard is doing a reading group. Some of the most creative, the most interesting ideas come when you empower the community to think of their own creative ways to take on the novel. You know, I'm definitely one of those people who when I talked about a minute ago about how there's a different experience when you read the novel as a child than when you read it as an adult. That was definitely my experience. I think when you start reading that novel in middle school, which is when a lot of people read it for the first time, you find yourself really identifying with Scout. She's a little bit younger than you are, but she's, you know, you're about your age and kind of figuring out the same things that you're figuring out. And then you reread as an adult and you see a lot more of yourself or you want to see more of yourself in characters like Atticus, who really is a remarkable role model. A lot of folks I talk to really pull him out. He's a really complicated but a really strong person who kind of shows Scout and the other children in the novel, you know, how to be an adult and how to be compassionate and how to sort of see the world around you the way it really is. I think it's just really remarkable every time I reach out to somebody around this novel and the big read that they had a very personal reaction to it. I think what we did last year, we did Fahrenheit 451, which is a really interesting novel and a really timely novel, but I don't think people had the same kind of emotional connection to it the way they do to Kill a Mockingbird. And so that was the most amazing thing for me doing this novel this year. One of the great things we're doing this year, we're launching something called The Flight of the Mockingbirds, which there's about 200 copies of the novel that have been distributed to volunteers and, you know, people out in the community. They're encouraging folks to take the book and read it and then leave it somewhere where someone else will find it. So the idea that it would get all over the county, all over the community, that multiple people would have a chance to discover this in their dentist's office or in their gym or at a park bench or wherever, and really make this a communal experience. And then they're encouraged to go to the Big Read Sonoma website, bigreadsonoma.com, and leave their thoughts and enter our raffle. And so I think that's another really organic thing that a lot of folks got really excited about. So we're hoping that Sonoma County reading To Kill a Mockingbird will help us all collectively realize the vision of Harper Lee towards a more just and empathetic future.
The synergism of people coming together is particularly remarkable at Anna Lee High School in Sebastopol, California. Though To Kill a Mockingbird is taught routinely in high schools across California, These teachers have embraced the Big Read as an opportunity for growth and experience, far outreaching standard curricular methodologies. Artist and teacher Sally Briggs and math teacher Dave Casey talk about their collaboration.
Sally and I are part of a group of teachers that do integrated work, integrated curriculum, and we call ourselves the 7 C's. And the C's, each C stands for the first letter of a word that has to do with curriculum in school. But it also is an acronym for sort of floating, not aimlessly, but actually having a direction that we want to go. And while we're always on our journey, we're still trying to make sense out of it. So the 7 C's stand for a core curriculum in which students create, collaborate, and contribute in order to make a connection to the community. So we've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And we've done some projects together. And I wasn't part of the Big Read last year, but I was part of some artwork that Sally and I did in one of my algebra classes. We took some Mondrian sketches that are very rectangular, and we looked at graphs of lines in algebra, and we figured the kids could make some Mondrian-type sketches. So I did the algebra work, and Sally did the artwork with the kids.
And I played pretty much on the strength of color in certain areas of a picture, and it was really powerful working with, because first of all, I'm not really a mathematician, but I think some of these kids that are in our classes are sometimes more visually oriented or math oriented, and I think we saw the strength of coming together with that powerful teaching. Anyway, this team teaching has been marvelous, and I just want to interject that the cool thing is that when I remember back to Kill a Mockingbird when I was a teenager reading it, I couldn't get over this wonderful tree in To Kill a Mockingbird, and every time I've gone back to read it, I stop at this tree image, this knot in this tree, where Boo Radley, who is fairly socially abused from a family situation or two, he hides things in a tree, and he wants to communicate, and he wants to be part of the community. And I think that it goes right in line with the 7 C's, is that we as people at our school are trying to produce students that will not only learn a curriculum, but give back to a community.
And what I found interesting is that you saw that metaphor, and I think as an artist, it's a great metaphor, the tree. I only recently read To Kill a Mockingbird, so I didn't really know what to do, but once you told me about the tree, I thought, well, here's a perfect connection, because we do something in geometry called the fractal tree, where you can draw a series of lines, and each time the line branches out, you get an angle, and then from that angle, you get a length, a segment that's actually a ratio of the previous length. So you might have a fractal tree where each branch is half the previous length. And if you add up all those lengths, you can see what happens to the perimeter of the tree, and it creates this math formula. But it seemed like a great thing to attach to for me, that this idea of a tree is symbolic of what you felt the book was about.
Right.
As I started reading the book, I actually thought there was going to be more reference to the tree. And yet there is. It's really powerful because the gifts that Boo Radley leaves in the tree, those are images that I think stay throughout the book. And of course, at the very end, when Boo rescues the kids, it pulled that all together. So as I was thinking about what project to do, I was concerned, thinking, am I doing the book justice by doing this tree? So what I decided that I'm going to do is at the end of every branch, I'm going to have the kids either do a picture or just, I mean, literally write the name of some of the main characters in the book. So I want my tree to be essentially leaves that are the characters in the book.
Wow, that's great.
Those leaves symbolize a connection of nearness, of proximity, without actually touching.
Oh, wow.
Each person.
That's great.
But if you trace it back to each branch, there is connection.
Right.
So everybody in Macomb County is connected.
Right.
Even though they're not touching each other. So I want to have the kids try to make those connections, and I might have a tree of just the Finches and their family, or I might have a tree of the entire town, or of Boo and his connections. But I think the best part is to let the students figure that out. So right. I haven't worked out the real details yet.
Well, the same thing for me. I've got these dream end goals that I want, but I think that it's going to evolve. And a big component for me on connection in our community, I'm a big buddy to my father, who's 89, and I'm surrounded by a lot of seniors that I don't feel are that connected. I feel like they're isolated in their own little worlds, and I feel that half of them aren't being listened to. I feel that they have a rich history. I feel that they want to give to the community, but they're kind of being put to the side in their elderliness. So my feeling with my tree, or my hope, is that students will create their little gifts, their little secrets, their personal statements, and put them in these tree trunks. And the dream would be is that they will then give their tree trunk to a senior in our community, and I'm going to ask that senior to respond to their gifts, to their secrets, to their wonderful creations, and hopefully give back. So this is a wonderful way for me to make connections that I think are going to evolve. It's going to evolve in its own way into great communication and bringing the community together closer. Yeah. And how funny it is that it's a hole in a tree, and yet we're filling it. So anyway.
Yeah. I think the more we discuss it, the more symbolism we see.
Right.
And one of the advantages that I have is that our English teachers, I think the entire freshman English department teaches the book, To Kill a Mockingbird. So there's three other members of the Seven Seas, but two of them, Susan Swanson and Lori Fadave, they have a couple of English classes of ninth graders, and they're really teaching the book, which is the nice, again, the great part for me is I don't have to.
I'm excited in my class, especially after last year's experience with the Big Read in 451, is that it became almost infectious. What's going to happen this year, and I've already heard kids say it, is that they have either siblings or they have little or, you know, freshman kids that my advanced kids are actually going to go in and mentor, be helpers in the English class. They will have already made their tree and their creations or hollowed out their tree. And they're going to actually come into the freshman class and be mentors, be role models to show the visual richness of the book through their tree creation. So I think that that's another additive, is that we have a school that allows this cross curriculum.
So the English teachers, Lori specifically, have looked at the three eras, and that is the Great Depression when the book was written, and then in the 1960s, the Civil Rights Movement, and then now. So they're bringing this, the past, present, together. So I think they're looking at those issues, as you said, community issues and even national issues. It's not just about the metaphor of the tree, and it's not just about the geometry, but I think even in English class, they're taking it one step further, and they're actually looking at social issues. So while you and I can do it visually, they're doing it socially, and which I think why this book is so powerful. I think there's a connection because of the kids in the story that maybe the ninth graders can identify with. I hope they can identify with.
And we also, another community liaison that we're making is that we have been granted some money to include an amazing field trip to Armstrong Woods, where we're going to have a writer and a poet meet us and talk about the book more. And we're actually going to create some of our written creations there and be looking at trees, which will be really exciting. It's a learning lesson for us too, botany of a tree. So, and I know that the tree is not always the biggest thing when you look at To Kill a Mockingbird. I know that the trial is so big and the murder is so big and the injustice is so big. But again, there's this precious thing between Boo Radley and these two children. And I think it's something that is very tangible for our high school students, this relationship.
I look forward to the display of the work. And I think that's one thing that is unique about this project, is that it can bring almost the entire student body together, because all students have read it by the time they got to the senior year, or at least 90%. So our presentations with your log and the precious gifts of the students, and then the fractal trees, which I want to make works of art to make something beautiful that's also geometric.
So my advanced students that have worked with Scratchboard will be going into Dave's class and doing Scratchboard technique and all that. And then positively again with our community, our local library has promised a showtime and opening for all of these tree trunks and these scratchboard arts to come in our community of Sebastopol. But I do think that this whole combination of giving and receiving a tree with a senior citizen is going to take a few months, and I don't want to rush it. I want this to be a real exchange of creativity, reading the poems and reading and writing between the senior and the person.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's a nice element that I haven't even envisioned, but I think it's probably the best part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that the Seven Seas is attempting to do, is make the connection with the community. So whether it's the art or whether it's a tree, that's That is going to be a great thing.
I'm not sure how the library is going to house all these trees, but that's okay.
Well, wherever it is, I'm very excited about to see the finished product, and I'm going to be very proud of. I know the kids' work is going to be wonderful, and I'll be proud of to see that displayed from a geometry student, not from an art student, but from geometry. And I think that's such a great thing that we can use geometry as a foundation for artwork,
right.
Even though it's really displaying the relationships, it's still the foundation, and I'm proud of that. What the kids are going to do, and proud of to be able to make that connection between the art and the book and the relationship and the community.
You are listening to Radio Sketches. It's a sin to kill a mockingbird. Community takes on a unique significance for author and poet Bart Schneider. A San Francisco native, Bart has made his home in Minnesota for the past many years. Truly, within days of returning to California and making his home in Sonoma, Bart took on the big read.
I'm excited about this. Well, this came around very quickly for me and for Sonoma. It came around quickly for the bookstore and the Sonoma Community Center, and I was just moving into town. Then I heard about it, and then I went back to Minnesota for a month. It might have been a different effort if I had been on the ground for a long time, and also if I had lived here before, which I really haven't. So I don't know that many people. So to be the person that was doing most of the organizing was a little bit absurd. But, I used to edit issues of magazines in which I knew nothing about the subject. And, suddenly I'm doing an issue on Latin American literature, and I really knew very little about Latin American literature. So I asked a lot of people who did know something, and one person leads you to another. And that's kind of what we did here. And so we put together a really good panel that's going to be at General Vallejo's house outside in the shadow of the house in the beautiful garden. And that's going to be with Zuli Barone, who's a Latina community organizer, Gay LeBaron, who's a legendary journalist and historian, Jonah Raskin, who teaches at Sonoma State and knows quite a bit about local history, and Arthur Dawson, who is a local historian and poet, in Glenn Allen that works at the Ecology Center there or nearby, and has got a couple books about local ecology and history and the origin of place names, and is really an interesting guy. So I'm excited about that. I'm going to moderate it and just try to stay out of the way and kind of throw it out as what I distilled from the book in a way that seemed like it could be useful in a forum discussion open to the public is tolerance and intolerance in town life, or by extension in county life. And there we are in General Vallejo's house, and so I wanted to get a little bit of the history and also talk about what it's like in the community right now. And I may just throw out a question to people right away, like, when I say tolerance in Sonoma County, what do you think? When I say intolerance in Sonoma County, what do you think? Just to put some meat on the table right away to see if we can kind of make it crack. And as I say, I know almost nothing about the subject, so it'll be my job to just stay out of the way and steer the conversation here and there. So that's something that's exciting me, you know. And plus, I got the idea as an old magazine guy to ask a few people in the community to write their responses to reading the book again, or for the first time, as I read it for the first time. I'd seen the film a few times, but it was my first reading of the book. And so we have a little booklet that Pat Nolan did the design of, and that should be really interesting. It's got pieces by Arthur Dawson, who I really admire, Rose Murphy, Ken Brown, who's the former mayor and the mayor pro tem, Linda Kelly, who's the city manager of Sonoma. I've got a little piece in there, And Andy Weinberger from Reader's Books has a piece in there. I don't know if I'm leaving anybody out. I gave everybody 200 words, which I thought, that is really tight. But usually in my experience, people, when you give them 250 words, they write a whole lot more. And in this case, it didn't really happen. People came in. It might be because a number of them are probably don't identify as writers. Writers have a hard time holding themselves back. So here's my piece, which culminates in a poem. After a recent reading of the novel, I tried to fight my first response to see the world divided between good guys and bad. I believe that a measure of fear that can be stoked into fury lives in each of us. With that in mind, I offer the following poem, Fury. Before I blame everything on other people's stupidity and neglect and the fact that so much that I've expected and deserved has not materialized, I like to put on a fresh white shirt and see how quickly the fury soils it. Which may be what? A slightly oblique reference, I don't know, to the book, but it really got me thinking about where that poison comes in a society that can turn on its own people. And as we see it in these political times, fear is a kind of currency that's traded very loosely and can really go out of control and turn people into crazies. A little group of people, a whole nation in the case of Germany and World War II. This was the first time I read the book. As a novelist, I just saw it as a beautifully crafted novel of its time. And I was maybe, if anything, a little bit envious of, as a writer, as writers we get to be like that, envious of just the pure coherence of it. How well Harper Lee said what she meant. Which, I know after writing a number of novels, you get close sometimes, but you don't always get there. And I think she just, it's perfect pitch. It's just such a good book, It's satisfying. It's a career book. And I'm not interested in speculating about why she hasn't written another. Well, I think the challenge of this book is not to see it as historical fiction that tells us about another time. It's set in the 30s. So the challenge is not to divorce it from our lives right now, and I think that's what we're trying to do in Sonoma, is look at this and ask the questions, how do some of the things that happen in this book apply to present-day Sonoma? Things are not as comfortable as we sometimes would like to think, or they may be comfortable for some of us, but they're not comfortable for everybody. And that's what I'd love for this book to agitate, rather than considering it as a literary masterpiece or thinking about it as a great historical fiction or relating it to the way the movie was made. I think it gives us an opportunity, and we'd be smart to take it seriously. At first I thought, oh, that old thing, to be reading that, but then I realized, oh, no, this really applies. And I've been excited to think about how many people want to get together and talk about how this applies to the issues of the day.
To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. The subject of Sonoma County's Big Read. But what of the mockingbird? Veronica Bowers of the Madrone Audubon Society herself provides vivid descriptions of this lovely songbird.
Madrone Audubon Society, our local chapter of the National Audubon Society, was approached by the folks who are organizing the Big Read in Sonoma County to participate in this year's Big Read because the chosen book is To Kill a Mockingbird. And since we're a bird conservation organization, that seemed like a very natural tie-in for us to maybe talk a little bit about our native songbird, the northern mockingbird, and maybe some attributes that the mockingbird shares with the underlying theme of the book, To Kill a Mockingbird. So one activity that we'll be doing to participate in the Big Read is a family bird walk in Sebastopol at the Sebastopol Preserve, located next to the community center on Morris Street, where we'll examine the natural history of the mockingbird, watch it in action in its natural habitat, and of course, observe some of the other bird species who are there as well. It's wonderful riparian and oak woodland habitat. And maybe talk a little bit about what the mockingbird represents in this wonderful classic piece of literature, To Kill a Mockingbird. I think everyone recalls that in the book, when characters Scout and Jim receive air guns for Christmas, Atticus warns them that it's fine to practice maybe shooting tin cans, but that they must never kill a mockingbird because it's a sin to do so. True, it is a sin, but it actually is, they're federally protected in the United States, so it's also against the law. So he knew what he was talking about. But what I really enjoyed is how Miss Maudie, their neighbor, goes on to elaborate a little bit more about why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. Mockingbirds are near and dear to my heart. They're beautiful, wonderful birds. Watching them in the garden is so truly enjoyable. So I really understood where she was coming from here when she said that mockingbirds never do anyone harm, that they're not pests in any way. In fact, they're not, because they actually make a great effort to eat the pests out of our garden. Most of a mockingbird's diet is insects. So she was right on about that. And that all they do is sing beautifully and live peacefully. So true. So what we hope is to kind of share some of those qualities about the mockingbird with people who participate in the family bird walk with us, and just enjoy the mockingbird and that it represents true goodness and innocence, and that they should always be protected. So the northern mockingbird is elegant in shape. They have a very long, slender tail. They stand very upright. They have gray body feathers. When they extend their wings, they're beautiful, long, gray wings with white wing bars. And they do this wonderful hunting technique where they get down on the ground and they spread their wings like an archangel. It's called flashing. And the idea is that those beautiful white wing bars, those striking white wing bars on their wings, sort of scare the insects up off the ground and flush them out of the grass. But it's a wonderful opportunity to really get a nice look at the mockingbird's plumage. They also have a long, slender black bill. The adults, when they're mature, have goldish green eyes, and that long, slender tail is mostly gray with white feathers on the outer edges. And they sing, of course, so beautifully. The males mostly sing, but this time of year, it's not unusual to hear males and females singing. The reason females would be singing this time of year is to define their territory. So mockingbirds are solitary. They're independent, except within the breeding season. And if you're lucky, you may have a mockingbird who graces your yard, but it's probably only one mockingbird. The only time they'll tolerate the presence of another mockingbird is, as I said, during the breeding season. And so they sing to define their territories. And then in the springtime, the male will sing to attract a mate. They say, the ornithologists, the people who study birds, say that the larger a male mockingbird's repertoire of song is, the more attractive he is to the female mockingbird. And they can have upwards of 50 different songs in their repertoire. They're of the family of birds called Mimidae, mimics. So they're not only able to sing their own innate, natural mockingbird song, but they can actually imitate other bird songs, like the song of a Swainson's thrush or the song of a robin. They can imitate the call of a killdeer or a cat meowing or a door squeaking or a car alarm going. And that may all be part of that 50-song repertoire that they sing. Sometimes all night long during the breeding season. And it's really beautiful. It's one of their unique qualities that it's just very enjoyable to observe. So I coordinate monthly outings for youth in our community. And we feel strongly that the more people understand our natural resources, appreciate our natural resources, love our natural resources, particularly birds, the more they'll want to protect them and work to preserve them. Back in the early 1900s, there was a piece of legislation that was passed through Congress that protects all of our native bird species because they didn't enjoy any protections prior to that, and they were hunted, many of them hunted to the point of extinction, actually. The passenger pigeon is a great example of a bird we no longer have in North America because it was hunted to nothing. So this piece of legislation, it's called the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and this basically protects any bird from harm, its active nest, its chicks, or its eggs. Maybe if you remember way back when in the early 1900s, the use of feathers and bird parts was very popular in the millinery trade, all over the world actually, not just North America. And so a lot of these beautiful native birds that we have, barn swallows and the great white egret, their feathers were used to adorn women's hats. And this was a huge contributor to many bird population declines. And so some very smart scientists and just people who cared and loved birds decided that that wasn't going to be okay anymore. And they got these laws passed that do protect our birds to this day. We at Madrone Audubon are pleased to be part of the Big Read. Obviously, we value nature education, but we really advocate literacy and reading, and particularly such a wonderful piece of literature like To Kill a Mockingbird. So we're pleased to be part of this, and we hope that some of the people participating in this wonderful event will come out and join us for a bird walk.
Traditionally, the public library has been a place of resource and refuge. And indeed, a vibrant public library is the seed and the fruit of civilized society. The Sonoma County Public Library will host many discussions of To Kill a Mockingbird throughout the county. Librarian Robin Waters encourages reading and participation in conversation and community.
This has been one of my personal favorite titles since I first read it in seventh grade, which was the year Martin Luther King was assassinated. So it really resonates with me on that level. I was delighted that they chose To Kill a Mockingbird for the election year, because I think besides the sort of primary theme of the book, which is justice, I think one of the strongest messages in the book is about the importance of seeking justice even if you think you aren't going to get it. It makes me think of people who say they don't vote because they feel their vote doesn't count. And I think Harper Lee understood that if you don't step up and do what you can do, even if you think you won't succeed, then you're complicit in your own misery. And there's a small section in the book I'd like to read to you that addresses this. And it involves Scout asking her father why he's taken on Tom Robinson's case. If you shouldn't be defending him, then why are you doing it? For a number of reasons, said Atticus. The main one is, if I didn't, I couldn't hold up my head in town. I couldn't represent this county in the legislature. I couldn't even tell you or Jem not to do something again. You mean if you didn't defend that man, Jem and me wouldn't have to mind you anymore? That's about right. Why? Because I could never ask you to mind me again, Scout. Simply by the nature of the work, every lawyer gets at least one case in his lifetime that affects him personally. This one's mine, I guess. You might hear some ugly talk about it at school, but do one thing for me, if you will. You just hold your head high and keep those fists down. No matter what anybody says to you, don't you let them get your goat. Try fighting with your head for a change. It's a good one, even if it does resist learning. Atticus, are we going to win it? No, honey. Then why? Simply because we were licked 100 years before we started is no reason for us not to try to win, Atticus said. Scout is a wonderful character, an interesting character. For a young girl, she's an amazing observer. She learns as much from Atticus by watching him as she does by talking with him. And she's a particularly favorite character of mine because of her relationship with Atticus. Here's a little girl whose father understands her and encourages her. He teaches her to read against the school rules. He teaches her to read at home. And she gives us, through sort of her innocence, a second pass at learning these themes that maybe we've moved away from as we've gotten older and cynical. She's this innocent character. We see also sort of one step ahead of her brother Jem, going through the same process, but he's just a little further along the line, enough so that he feels tremendous pain when he sees the injustice happening. He's learning that his town is not necessarily full of the good and loving people he thought it was, that some of them have dark places and do wrong things. And it's such a painful process for him. And then right behind him, we have Scout, who's just beginning to sort of intellectually get that there's a fundamental difference between the people who would defend Tom Robinson and the people who would condemn him. Well, again, it goes back to my belief that if you don't take action, if you don't step up when you're asked to step up, then you're complicit in the world being not the world that you want or believe in. And Atticus saw that when he was asked to defend Tom Robinson. He could have said no. He knew it was a lost cause going in, but he also knew that taking on that case was a statement for his children, for his community, for the world, that they've got to continue to seek justice for all people equally. The interesting thing about a little background for this book was when Harper Lee was about 6 years old, that was when the Scottsboro Boys trial was, where 9 African-American men were arrested for accused of raping 2 white women on a train. And they were arrested, and the presumption of innocence was thrown out the window. It did not apply to them. And that was simply along the lines of race. If they had been white men, they would have been presumed innocent until proven guilty. All 9 of those men suffered unduly, and it was only after all of that suffering that it came forth that the accusation was false. So that sort of echoes in the trial of Tom Robinson in the book To Kill a Mockingbird. He is so clearly innocent, physically incapable of doing the act of which he was accused, and yet he was found guilty anyway. There was never going to be justice for him, and Atticus Finch knew that, and he stepped up anyway, which is a remarkable act of courage. I think that the appeal of To Kill a Mockingbird to today's readership is the enduring themes, the search for justice, the importance of privacy. If you look at the storyline of Boo Radley, how all he wanted was to be left alone. And in today's society, how much privacy do we actually have anymore? I think people yearn for that. And they also yearn for, and this sounds a little sentimental perhaps, a hero. And Atticus Finch is a hero in the truest sense. He's not magical. He's not got weaponry. He's just a man doing what he believes is right. And I think people today yearn for that. Well, I became involved in the Big Read because I'm a reference librarian at the Central Branch of the Sonoma County Library. And every year, well, for the past 3 years, we've been involved in the Big Read, which is a program where a community reads a book. And it was a program developed in response to a survey that showed readership declining in the United States. So every year they pick a title, communities read it, and we set up discussions all throughout the county for people of all ages. So, of course, the library is involved. We have several dates for discussions. We have books available that people can pick up from their local branch. And we're also going to be showing the movie in 3 or 4 locations. The wonderful thing about the Big Read is that it is wide open for people of all ages, all reading abilities. I think it's particularly inviting for people who haven't read a book in a while and maybe are looking for some social interaction to read the book and come to our discussion groups, which are very warm and welcoming and really interesting. And usually there's a broad spectrum of people involved. So anybody who can read a novel, so that puts probably in the tweens and teens area to begin with, on up through our senior patrons. Well, certainly as a librarian, I would love to put this book into everybody's hands. I think that it's a wonderful title to choose for the Big Read because it has so many concerns that cross ages and cultures and opens up dialogue. I also think it's a wonderfully absorbing read, and I would love to see people have the experience that I have of curling up with a good book, which sounds trite, but it's that wonderful experience of being so absorbed, so beyond yourself. And not every book does that successfully, but To Kill a Mockingbird does.
You've been listening to Radio Sketches. It's a Sin to Kill a Mockingbird, produced by Suzanne Lang for KRCB Radio and The Big Read. We featured David Kippen, Robin Metalitz, Sally Briggs, Dave Casey, Bart Schneider, Veronica Bowers, and Robin Waters. The opening reading was by Sissy Spacek for Harper Radio Books. Music by the Blacklight Bassoon Ensemble. For more information on the events mentioned here, the panel discussion at General Vallejo's house in Sonoma on Sunday, October 5th, or the family bird walk in Sebastopol on Saturday, September 27th, or all the discussion groups and film screenings at the county libraries and elsewhere around Sonoma County, please visit online www.bigreadsonoma.com or sonomalibrary.com/screads, or call 707-584-2005. Thanks for listening.